Page 260, chapter 46, pasuk 28. The pasuk says Yaakov is on his way down with the 70 souls to go visit Yosef. And before Yaakov goes down to Mitzrayim, as the pasuk says, "Ves Yehuda shalach lefanov," he sent Yehuda to go before him, lahedus lefanov, to prepare ahead of him. And the Rashi says to establish a yeshiva in the land of Goshen. Vayavera arta Goshen, they came to the land of Goshen. Basically, like we started discussing last week, that Yaakov understood he's not going to go down to Egypt without a yeshiva. If there be a yeshiva, he's willing to go. No yeshiva, no place to study Torah, he's not going to go. So Yaakov didn't want to wait until he got to Egypt and then waste time establishing a yeshiva, because it takes time. So he sent Yehuda before him to establish a yeshiva. In fact, it's interesting, on the 9th of Adar, and the second Adar, Tav Shin, which was 1940, the previous Rebbe came to America, and 24 hours after he was in America, he called in one of his older Hasidim, and he said, "You know, I'm here 24 hours already and there's no yeshiva, what's going on?" He said, "What's going on? There's no yeshiva, I'm here 24 hours and there's no yeshiva." So immediately they got 10 bachrim together and they started a yeshiva in 770. So Yaakov said he's not going to go down to Egypt without a yeshiva, so he sent Yehuda before him. And this is what we were in the middle of discussing last week. Why did he send Yehuda? So some of Farshim learn, like Rabbeinu Bachaya says, that when anything had to get done, Yehuda was the guy to do it. He was the strongest, he was the most aggressive, he was the one that did it. So therefore he was the one that Yaakov sent to open a yeshiva. Last week we were discussing why didn't he ask Yosef to open a yeshiva. After all, Yosef was the leader. He had all the money. He had all the know-how. He had all the abilities to open a yeshiva. Why didn't Yaakov email, so to speak, to Yosef and say, "Please open a yeshiva"? So the Rebbe explains in a sicha that if you want to open a yeshiva and if you want to learn Torah, you have to be involved completely in the learning. You can't be part-time learning. I mean, part-time learning is important, but you can't have a concept of opening a yeshiva and being part-time. Yosef was busy in government. Yosef was running the country of Egypt. And therefore, Yaakov understood to have Yosef open a yeshiva, to have Yosef open a yeshiva is not the proper thing to do. So therefore, what did Yaakov do? He wanted to send on somebody that was going to be involved in it completely. So he sent Yehuda. What are the uniquenesses of Yehuda besides being the chevraman, so to speak, that gets things done? But Yaakov understood that the proper way of learning Torah is with the submission and the realization that it's God's Torah. A person could study Torah as a wisdom, like a secular wisdom, so you also have a topic called Talmud or something like that. That's not the ultimate way of learning Torah. Learning Torah basically has to be done in a way that a person has submission and total dedication and bittul, so to speak in Hebrew, to God. Yehuda was called Yehuda because, as Leah said when she named him, "Hapam odes Hashem," now I will admit or thank or really submit myself to God. Yehuda, even though all the names of the tribes are connected to God, but Yehuda, if you look at the name Yehuda, it's spelled Yud-Kei Vav-Kei with a Dalet in the middle. So Yehuda is really the real name of God, except with an additional Dalet in the middle of the word. So therefore, Yaakov understood that if you want to learn Torah in Mitzrayim, it has to be a pure Torah. It has to be a Torah of Yehuda, of submission and understanding is God's wisdom. Once somebody goes through a compromising stage in Torah, once you compromise truth, it's automatically not truth. You can't compromise. The other thing is partially truth, sometimes true. It's either true or not. When the previous Rebbe came to America, also in 1940, and the previous Rebbe started preaching and teaching and living the example that it has to be pure, unadulterated Yiddishkeit. Yiddishkeit has to be pure. And many of the so-called leaders of world Jewry in New York at that time came to the Rebbe, and they said, "You're making a big mistake. Well, we discussed this in the past. What they said basically to the Rebbe was that when a fire is burning, you don't look for clean water to extinguish the fire. You take any dirty water that you have, any water that you have, and you try to extinguish the fire. And he said in America, 1940, it wasn't like today, with his Yiddishkeit all over the place. It was, I mean, the guy that had a beard was somebody from Mars. They thought he had horns under his hat. I mean, whatever. So, by the way, it's not a joke. I once spoke at a group in the 60s to kids, and they said, can you please take off your hat? We want to see your horns. Promise you. They said to the few bachelors who were together speaking, they said, can you take off your hat? I want to see your horns. So,
Jewish kids?
Jewish kids, American Jewish kids. We spoke for them in a conservative Reformed temple. They heard Chassidim have horns under their hats. So, the Friedrich Rebbe was told by these people that if there's a fire of assimilation burning in America, you don't look for clean water, clean, so to speak, pure Judaism. You take any Judaism to extinguish the fire. So the previous Rebbe answered them that they're making a big mistake. And he explained to them, you're right if you're talking about clean water and impure water. Then you'd be right. But if you're talking about water versus kerosene, and you're going to try to extinguish a fire with kerosene, not only are you not going to make the fire less, you're going to make the fire much worse. And the previous Rebbe said to them that impure Yiddishkeit is not putting dirty water on the fire, you're putting kerosene on the fire, you're making it much worse. So therefore Yaakov understood that if the Jews are going to be in a country called Mitzrayim, which at that time was the most corrupt, from one side it was the most intellectual, cultured nation of the world. From the opposite side it was the most corrupt nation of the world. So if you're going to have a situation of a yeshiva without the pure Yiddishkeit of a Yehuda, so Yaakov understood it's going to backfire. And therefore the one that he sent down actually to open the yeshiva was Yehuda instead of Yosef. That he should be pure, totally devoted and dedicated to the concept of a yeshiva. Last week we also mentioned that the word Goshna, Gimel Shin Nun Hei, is the letters on the dreidel. Nun Gimel Hei Shin is the same letters as Gimel Shin Nun Hei. That's what we mentioned last week. And we mentioned last week that the word Goshna or Nun Gimel Hei Shin is the same numerical value as Mashiach. Gimel Shin Nun Hei equals 358 and Mashiach equals 358. What's the connection between the concept? We said last week, this is where we finished off. Last week we said we're going to discuss the connection between Goshna or Nun Gimel Hei Shin and the concept of Mashiach. What does this have to do one thing with the next? So the explanation in a nutshell is that the whole concept of the transformation of Egypt to a level of holiness, meaning you transform Egypt and you create a yeshiva there, you create a Jewish neighborhood, you create a Jewish environment with the yeshiva and the Jews all flourishing there in Yiddishkeit, is basically what Mashiach is all about. Mashiach is basically all about the transformation of darkness into light, the transformation of Egypt to holiness, the transformation of Goshen, which was the prime area, the Beverly Hills of Mitzrayim was Goshen, and that has to be transformed to the concept of light, and therefore that in itself is really the concept of Mashiach. Because Mashiach is the transformation of evil, of world, to Kedusha. Okay? Now, okay, Pasuk Chavtes. Ve'yaseh Yosef merkavtei, Yosef harnessed his chariot, and as Rashi says, he did it by himself. Even though Yosef was the viceroy, the king of Egypt, and he had many, many servants that would be able to help him, nevertheless, Yosef did it himself. As Rashi says, the expression that out of respect for his father. And as he wanted to get the mitzvah himself. Other commentaries, by the way, like Ibn Ezra and other people learn that it doesn't mean Yosef himself did it, it means he had it done for him. But he had servants doing it. Rashi learns that he himself did it. Just like we find in Chumash, a few places that very prominent people saddled their own donkeys. When Avram Avinu was told by Hashem to bring up Yitzchak as a sacrifice, it said, Vayashkim Avram Babaker, Vayachresh es Chamerei. He saddled his own donkey, even though he had many, many servants. But to do the mitzvah of killing his kid, sacrificing his kid. He was so excited that Hashem gave him the mitzvah, he did it himself. The same thing we find in the evil. When Bilam was going to curse the Jews, or he thought he was going to go curse the Jews, it says over there that Bilam got up and he saddled his donkey. He was so excited about the ability to curse the Jews, he did it himself. So God said to him, Avram Avinu beat you to it. You know, he already saddled his donkey. But here many commentators learn that Yosef himself, to do the mitzvah of Kibbutz Av, to go honor his father, he did it himself. Now, Vayalu Kras Yisrael Aviv, he went up to meet his father. Now, the obvious question is, it's illogical to say that Yosef went by himself. Vayal means, in Hebrew, he went up. It doesn't say Vayalu, they went up, like him and his servants, or the whatever. Vayal means, he went up himself. So there's two different ways of learning. Some commentaries learn that Yosef wanted to be by himself. He didn't let anybody else go with him. And other commentaries learn, Yosef did go up with other soldiers, because he was the most prominent person, the Torah doesn't mention that other people went with him. But some people learn that Yitaka went up himself to go meet his father. He wanted to have a private reunion with his father. He went up. Now, the Daskein in Balei HaTosfos says, went up is not only in a physical sense, it means in a spiritual sense. He went up, he elevated himself and prepared himself to meet his father. Vayera Elov, he appeared to him. Vayipa Tzavarov, he fell on his neck. And he cried on his shoulders again. That means he cried twice. There's a lot of the commentaries on this pasuk. Vayera Elav, he appeared before him. It doesn't say who appeared before whom. So Rashi learns it means, because it says in the beginning of the pasuk, Yosef went up. So when it says he appeared, it means Yosef appeared to his father. Now, why didn't Yaakov, it sounds in the pasuk, he just popped in, you know. So it says, Yisrael's eyes were dim. He wasn't able to see well. Other commentaries explain that the kings in the olden times of Egypt used to come in a covered chariot, plus they used to wear a head covering. That was like the crown of respect. So, like, Yaakov saw this guy with a covered face, and then he realized it was actually Yosef. The deeper implication, and here's an interesting concept that the Al Shech HaKadosh says, Vayera Elav means Yosef was not embarrassed to look at his father. In other words, Yosef didn't turn off from Yiddishkeit, he didn't turn away from the path of Torah mitzvahs, that his father would be embarrassed to look at him. So the Al-Sheikh said, Vayera Elav mean, Yosef was proud of the fact that he was able to look at his father in the face and say to him that I'm your son. Another thing over here is that he cried on his neck, and again, Yosef cried on Yaakov's neck, and he cried on his neck again. This pasuk we discussed already when we were talking about Yosef and the brothers. But basically, Yosef was crying over Yaakov's shoulder twice. He says he cried, and then he cried again. Why did he cry twice? So, Rashi comments, because there were two temples that were going to be destroyed, and Yaakov was the patriarch of the Jewish people, and therefore the temples were destroyed, so Yosef cried over Yaakov's destruction.
It's written only one time, yes?
What?
Only because it's written odd,
twice. No, it says Vayipal Tzavarov, which Vayev got Tzavarov Eid, which means he did it twice. No, Eid is he did it twice. Yaakov, Rashi says, what happened to him? He was reading the Shema. Okay? And as we discussed a few weeks ago, not long ago, we discussed, this is the greatness of Yaakov Avinu. Some Mefarshim simply say that Yaakov was so great that after not seeing his son for 22 years, what did he do? He read the Shema. But like we learned, the Rebbe's explanation of this is that on your own destruction, you're not allowed to cry. Crying doesn't do anything. If your house burns down, you cry, you ain't going to get anywhere with it. A Jew on your own destruction has to build. So Yaakov, as the patriarch of the Bnei Yisrael, had no right to cry. because crying is not going to rebuild the temples. Yaakov Avinu read the Shema, like we discussed at great length a few weeks ago, that Yaakov actually read the Shema because that is considered destroying all the evils, and therefore Yaakov teaches us that when something bad happens, you don't kvetch like Jews always do. You're supposed to rebuild, and you're supposed to just move on. So that's why Yaakov read the Shema. Okay. Next pasuk. Vayemi Yisrael el Yosef.
Wasn't that the incident with Binyamin too?
Yes. Yeah, but that's where we discussed this whole issue. Yeah. Binyamin cried on Yosef's shoulders. Yeah. Yosef cried on Binyamin's shoulders. They didn't cry on their own shoulders, because on your own destruction you don't cry. You just build. Okay. So now it says, Vayem Yisrael al Yosef. Yisrael says to Yosef, and here he's called Yisrael, because now that Yosef was alive, and he realized that none of his children died, and Yosef was still a religious Jew, even though he was in Egypt for 22 years, so this caused Yaakov to be elevated to a level of Yisrael, that now it's Vayem Yisrael, until now it's Vayakov, okay? It said the whole time Yaakov. Now it says Yosef, Yisrael, because he was elevated to a level of greatness, because he saw that his kid was righteous, all his kids were alive, and he was happy. And now he says, Amusa apam, now I could die this time. Now, that doesn't mean Yaakov said, okay, now I want to die. We learned before, and we just mentioned it, Yaakov was told by God that if any of your kids die in your lifetime, you will not go to Olam Haba. That's why he was so bitter when he thought Yosef died, because he said, now that one of my kids died, I'll never be in the world to come. Now, Yaakov sees Yosef is alive. Not only is he alive physically, but he's alive spiritually. So now Yaakov says, thank God, I'm only going to die physically. Spiritually, that's why he says, Amusa Hapam, this time I'm going to die. Meaning physically, he understood every person dies. But he understood that spiritually, as far as the world to come is, he'll have that proper bliss and so on.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Question.
You're taking your wife's job too?
Yeah.
Well, good.
when the Mashiach comes, we're going to still say Shemoneh Esrei?
Yeah.
So are we going to say Avram Yitzhak be Yisrael?
Doubt it. What do you care if we say Yaakov? I'm serious. What do you care?
No, I'm just.
I don't know.
Okay, and number. We never
we
say Yisrael Avinu.
Anyway.
We never describe him as Yisrael Avinu.
Huh?
We never describe Yaakov as Yisrael Avinu.
Correct.
Why not?
Because there's an advantage of Yaakov over Yisrael.
I know, but in certain areas, but there's also an advantage of Yisrael over Yaakov.
So that's why we're called the Bnei Yisrael.
But I'm saying when we describe him.
Because Yaakov's greatness was that he was able to bring the Yud, the first letter of his name is Yud, mm-hmm. Akev, right? Mm-hmm. That he was able to bring Yud, which symbolizes God, even into the level of Akev, into the lowest levels of the heel. Akev is heel. So Yud, Akev, Yaakov is, the greatness of Yaakov, in that respect, is even a greater level than Yisrael. Because Yisrael, which we learned is the letters Li Rosh. If you switch around the letters, it's Mi Ahed, meaning the level of a head. That a head is great, that's no big deal. The greatness is that you make the heel great by taking the Yud of God's name and making it into a Akev, bringing it down into the heel. It's a much greater level. So there is an advantage of Yaakov. Therefore, it's called Avram Yitzchok and Yaakov. When we speak about the nation of the nation, then we say Bnei Yisrael. Okay, there's another issue over here which is very interesting about Yaakov Avinu saying the Shema. He quotes a Gemara, the Chokhov Rebbe quoted a Gemara. The Gemara says in Brachas, if your Yetzer Hara starts up with you, the Gemara gives you three advices what to do. Number one, study Torah. recite the Shema, and remember that one day you're going to die. In other words, you know, shape up before you ship out. So he says, when Yaakov Avinu was going into Eretz Yisrael, he did all three things. It's very interesting. Yaakov Avinu is coming to Mitzrayim, basically into Yetzer Hara'sville. You know, it's the city of Yetzer Hara. So what did Yaakov do? The Gemara says, you study Torah, say the Shema, and remember you're dying. So what did he opened the yeshiva by sending Yehuda. He read the Shema when he met Yosef. And then he says, Amusa Pam, now remember the day of death. So this coincides with the three advices that the Gemara gives, that when Yetzer Hara wants to start up with you, how to get rid of it is study Torah, which the Gemara says is the opposition. The Gemara says, I created the Yetzer Hara, I created Torah as the spice to undo the Yetzer Hara. And we know Shema is the acceptance of God in a Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice, and the day of the death causes bittul, humility in the person. Okay, another thing, what the commentators explain, when Yaakov Avinu was reading the Shema, and to preface it, there's a story when the previous Rebbe was a very mamish, a baby in the crib. It was a very beautiful baby. And his father, the Rebbe Rashab, was learning with somebody, and they happened to walk into the kid's room at night. The kid was sleeping. So the person commented to the Rebbe Rashab that he's a very beautiful baby. And the Rebbe Rashab had an urge to kiss the kid. But he held back his urge, and he ran out, and he wrote a Hasidic discourse instead. And when the Friedrich Rebbe, the previous Rebbe, became older, his father gave him the discourse that he wrote, and he said to him, this is a Hasidic kiss. This is a Hasidic kiss. Yaakov Avinu wanted to show that even though his, so to speak, his favorite son, Yosef, and not seeing him for 22 years, Yaakov wanted to show that the love of God is still a greater level, that we say in the Shema, is even a greater level and more important than the love that a person has to a child. And that's why there's an interesting halach in Shulchan Aruch, you're not allowed to kiss babies in a shul. A lot of people don't know this halacha. But there's halach in Shulchan Aruch that you're not allowed to kiss, it's a gemara, but it's a din Shulchan Aruch. In Jewish law it says, you're not allowed to kiss a baby in a shul. Why? Because the primary love in a shul has to be for God. Yeah.
So what age is the baby? Like 3?
Until 80. And only when accompanied with a parent. Little babies, it doesn't say.
Adults can kiss each other.
Huh?
Adults can kiss.
But the children, they can kiss their parents, right?
No. If they want to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What is the problem to kiss the child in the role that has to be kissed?
Because the ultimate level of a kiss is a display of love, and this showed a deeper level of love than just a physical kiss.
So when you're going to a show and you see a friend and you kiss her, you're
adults,
not
adults, unless if you're a kid. I mean, it says kids you don't kiss. Adults, you can kiss adults in a show. Okay. Yeah.
And I was told we shouldn't. That's why I'm asking.
What if you cannot hold back?
Okay. Now, Yisrael says, Yaakov says to Yosef, or here as he's known as Yisrael, Amusa Pam, now I can die. Acharei Re'esi Es Panecha, now that I've seen your face, Ki Eitcha Chai, that you're still alive. Now obviously it's redundant. Obviously if you see his face, he's alive. But again, like we learned before, Yaakov Avinu is not speaking about the physical living that Yosef is alive. He's speaking about the spiritual fact that Yosef is alive the way Yaakov wanted him to be alive. Okay. Vayomer Yosef Alechov. So now Yosef meets the brothers and everybody's coming. Now obviously Yosef didn't have to greet his brothers because he just saw them. You know, they came, they made him so much trouble in Egypt. So Vayomer Yosef Alechov, Yosef says to the brothers, Oh, one more interesting thing. The Mefarshim point out that it doesn't say here anywhere what the discussion between Yaakov and Yosef. I mean, now it says Yosef said to the brothers. Didn't Yosef say anything to his father besides kissing him twice? I mean, obviously they, you know, I'm sure he said, how are you? I mean, whatever. The Torah doesn't mention it. And this is a very interesting concept. Why doesn't the Torah mention it? Because it's none of our business. What do you mean it's none of our business? Everything mentioned in Torah, from the word Hira, guidance, everything mentioned in Torah is a lesson how a Jew is supposed to live. Anything that's not relevant to us to live as an individual, the Torah doesn't mention. If it would be relevant, the Torah would teach it to us. The same thing you have in scriptures, in the Vim, the Gemara says there were thousands of prophets. And even the famous prophets, Yeshaya, Yirmiyah, all those people, didn't only have the prophecies that they have in the book. They had much more prophecies. And many more prophecies. But the Gemara says any prophecy that was not relevant for future generations, the Torah doesn't mention, because it's not a history book. It's not a discussion book. Torah is a lesson how to live. So things which are mentioned to teach us how, for instance, the crying is a very important lesson, that you don't cry in your own destruction, you build. Things like that the Torah mentions. Discussions that went on between Yosef and his father at the time they met, there's nobody's business, so to speak, because there's nothing that we can learn from it for future generations, so the Torah doesn't mention it.
Also taken for granted that after 22 years they got kissed.
Yeah, but so why is the Torah saying they kissed?
Well, then when Yaakov and Esau, it said that they want to kiss each other.
That also teaches us something. Right. So any aspect, but this is in the concept is a very important concept. Anything the Torah mentions, it's not a story. It's not a history book. Anything the Torah mentions, even when the Torah says history or story, it's not a story or history. It's a lesson of how a Jew has to live. And all the details the Torah doesn't say, you know, Avraham Avinu lived 175 years. If you take all the stories of Chumash together about Avraham Avinu, it's about one day's worth. Figure out 5 days worth, 2 weeks worth, max. You know? I'm sure he spoke to his wife every day, and I'm sure he spoke to his kids every day, and I'm sure he did. But is that relevant for us that the Torah doesn't mention it? Anything the Torah mentions is because it's relevant for us. And that's the more important lesson. Whenever you see something in Chumash, the first thing you have to think is, what is the Torah telling me by this pasuk, by this story, by this recorded historical fact? There has to be a lesson, because if not, the Torah wouldn't say it.
How come we see that Yosef doesn't go look for his parents when he becomes the king of Egypt?
Right.
He could have just simply gone back and looked for
his parents. We discussed that, no? Because there was a ban, he wasn't allowed to. The brothers made a ban that God participated in, that until they break the ban, nobody's allowed to tell Yaakov that he's alive.
No, I'm saying, why didn't Yosef himself go back?
I'm telling you, because he wasn't allowed to. And because the time didn't come yet that God took off the ban. Okay, Vayemi Yosef Alechov, Yosef said to his brothers, well, Beisaviv, and to his father's family, so to speak, the whole household of his father, Elav agid lepari, I will go up and tell Pari, Ve'emre Elav, and I will tell him, Achei Beisavi, Asher Beretz Canaan, that my brothers and my father's house from the land of Canaan, Bo Eli, come to me. Now, basically, what Yosef wants to do is guarantee the brothers that they will be in the land of Goshen, which is away from the metropolis of Egypt, away from the corruption of Egypt, and also that they're going to be able to have their own place and not get stuck being in Pharaoh's army. So Yosef is priming the brothers, so to speak, what they should speak to Pharaoh, what they should tell Pharaoh when they meet him. So he says to them, I'm going to tell Pari that my brothers came from the land of Canaan, and va'anashim re'etzein, and the people, the brothers meaning, are shepherds, ki'anchi miknahoyu, because that's what they have been, v'tzeinam uv'karim v'chol asher lehem eviyu, and their sheep and their cattle and everything that belonged to them they brought. Now what does it mean? Yosef is basically telling Paray, or what he says he's going to tell Paray, that these brothers are self-sufficient and self-supportive. Don't think you're going to have a new burden on your head that you're going to have to support my family. Yosef wants to know to Paray right away, these guys are self-supportive. Yosef is teaching us a lesson here too. The Chedush HaRim, the first Gedder Rebbe they bring down over here, says that Yosef is establishing a pattern for all future generations. What was the lesson? Don't seek the grace of Gentile rulers. Don't seek, like he said, to emulate their ways, mingle with them socially. Jews have to be separated. They have to be in their own land, Goshen. They have to be separated. They cannot intermingle with the Goyim, because then they get affected and influenced by it, and Yosef didn't want that. So Yosef basically is telling them, I'm going to tell Paray that you guys can't mingle with everybody else because you're shepherd. The Egyptians despise shepherds because the lamb was the idol of Egypt. And therefore I'm going to tell them that, you should just be separated from everybody else. Wine and oil don't mix. Water and oil. Wine and oil also don't mix. Water and oil don't mix. And the Jew, as it's said in Chumash, even Bilam, when he was trying to curse the Jews, what did he realize? Am levodad yishkein. It's a nation that lives alone. And that's what Yosef is already, when the Jewish nation is becoming a nation in Egypt, and leaving Egypt they became the nation, so Yosef is already telling them, you should know, you guys are going to be separated. You're different than everybody else. Whether you like it or not, we're different than everybody else. Oil and water, you cannot mix. So you're different. So he says, I'll go up to Paray, and the Sipurna says, what is Yosef saying? I'm going to tell Paray before he asks the question, because then I have the upper hand. And if Paray starts asking questions first, he has the upper hand. And like this, I'm going to have the upper hand. Okay, I'll tell Paray, what does it mean, go up? So Mephashim say very simply, go up means he's going to go back on his chariot to go back to Egypt, because how else he's going up? He's not going up anywhere. Egypt was down. He's going up on the chariot. Okay, then he says, they can to settle permanently. Now, V'anashim re'etzein, as the Mephashim say, they already had their own money. They had... they're self-supportive. Paray doesn't have to support them. Now, Rabbeinu Bachai explains why is it, and we discussed this in past different occasions, why is it that they were shepherds? What's the uniqueness of being a shepherd? So Rabbeinu Bachai says there's two things. Number one, it's a good profession to make money. In those days, that's how they made money. And secondly, it minimizes the association with other people in the world. Like, we're learning the difference between Yosef and the brothers. Yosef is called Yosef a tzaddik. Why is only Yosef called the tzaddik? They were all tzaddikim. They were all righteous people. The answer is, but they were all secluded from world. They were all ghettoed. They were basically shepherds. They go into the pastures, into the fields. They seclude themselves from the world. And over there, it's very easy to daven and to learn and to become unaffected by what's going on in the world. Yosef, on the other hand, was inside Egypt, in the heart of government, in the heart of corruption, and over there he remained a tzaddik. So all the Shvatim, besides Yosef, who had the stronger ability than everybody else, they all became shepherds, because like he says, when you're away from social life, there's no Lashon Hara, there's no robbing, there's no hypocrisy, there's no falsehood. You're all alone. You're bored, basically. So, there's nothing to sin with.
But you can't help and spread the word.
Huh?
But you can't help and spread the word.
In those days, there's nobody to spread the word to, because all the Jews were in one place, and that was it. All the Jews of the world were in one neighborhood.
So the words are going.
Yeah, but that was Avraham Avinu's job. That's what Avraham Avinu did. At that time, they didn't have an obligation to do it. And therefore, they secluded themselves for their own purpose. Nowadays, with the Shiloh was called Pikuach Nefesh, of saving a life, you have to leave the ghetto and save lives. And that's why today, people that go out, the Chabad, the other Kiruv groups, go out and spread Yiddishkeit, because that's the Shaila of Pikuach Nefesh. There are people that are, spiritual lives are in danger, and you can't be locked up in a ghetto anymore. Besides the fact, in today's world, there are no ghettos, because everything's open already. There's no ghettos anymore, so people have to be, and as we said many, many times, in sports, you know, it's the holy Super Bowl season, especially in foot. I know everything. Whatever you know, I know. Now, everybody knows, especially in sports, but especially in football, the best defense is offense. When you're on the offense, that's the best defense.
How did you learn that?
He plays football.
Whatever you know, I know. I told you that.
But let me just go.
What I know sport. One
second. No, let me go.
And let me finish the point in the middle of the sentence.
Go ahead.
Now, when a person goes out into the world on the offensive, so to speak, to spread Yiddishkeit, then the chances of them becoming affected by it is minimal, because they're on the offensive. And therefore, it's even a halach in Shulchan Aruch. In Shulchan Aruch, there's a din in kitchen laws. Aidi detarad lemiflat lebala. When something spits out, it doesn't absorb in. Like we all know, when you talk, you can't listen, because when you're spitting out, you can't absorb. Now, what's this din? When you're kashering a treif a pot in boiling hot water, let's say, and what your purpose is to remove the treif that's in the pot to take it out, so the question, why doesn't the treif just go back in? If it's going out, why isn't the treif going back in? And the answer is, because when it's busy spitting it out, it can't absorb because it's busy spitting out. If a person is, to use a crude term, if you're spitting out Yiddishkeit, if you're teaching Yiddishkeit to the world, so then you don't have the opportunity to become become affected. So in the days of Yaakov Avinu and the children, where all the Jews were centralized in one place, so there's nobody to go out to. So then they had to be secluded, that they should be influenced by the rest of the world. But if you live in a situation where you live in a world that there is danger in the world of spiritual death, so then you have an obligation to go out and spread the word. But that's only, you're only protected if you're going out to teach. But if you're going out to become influenced, then you better ghetto yourself. Then you have to ghetto yourself. Yes?
Rabbi, when you mentioned the word
sports,
no more ghettos in the world, I'm assuming you mean to say there are no more Jewish ghettos. Because we have black and Latino ghettos here in New York, a couple other places. I mean, they meet the term ghetto right to the T. Oh, you agree with me? Oh, we are going to have a wonderful week.
I didn't say it. I just nodded my head.
Well,
I wouldn't stoop that low to say it.
Excuse me.
Okay. I would never agree with you verbally. Now, when Pari will call you, because Pari obviously is going to want to meet you, and Pari will call you and he'll say to you, Mama Aseichem, you know, what do you do for a living? Vamartim, you should say to him, Anshi Mikno Hoyo Avadecha, we are cattle people, Minoreno Varata, from our youth until now. Meaning, we have no other profession. We have no degrees, no college courses. All we know how to do is to be shepherds. And Yosef did this for a specific reason. He didn't want Pari to take him into government. He didn't want Pari to use him as soldiers. Because the brothers, Yosef understood, were not at that level like he was to become influenced by the society. And Yosef did everything possible to warn the brothers that they should never allow themselves to be taken in by Pari. So therefore, he said, you have to say to them, we were shepherds from our youth until now, gam anachnu, gam avisenu, us and our, even our fathers, meaning this is a family business of being shepherds. Why should you say this? Bavur teishu v'eres Geshen, that you should live in the land of Geshen, ki se'avas mitzrayim, because it's the abomination of Egypt, korei etzein, whoever is a shepherd. Now, basically, the Mefarshim explained, like we said, you have to refuse to go into Pari's army or whatever it is, and therefore you have to say it, that it's even our forefathers did it. Now, why that you should live in the land of Goshen, away from the mainstream Egypt, that you should have your own area, which happened to be the best area in any way in Egypt. And he says, since you were shepherds, and here there's different opinions. Rashi says, they're not going to let you settle in urban centers anyway, because shepherds can't work in the cities. And secondly, Egyptians despise shepherds. That's the way Rashi learns. Other Mefarshim learn, they didn't despise shepherds. On the contrary, sheep were the god of Egypt, so the people that took care of them were held in high esteem. They hated people who slaughtered sheep. It's like in India, you know, you have to let the cows walk around the streets, and you're not allowed to kill them, and you're not allowed to honk your horn at them, and, you know, so that's what he explains. It was. Mm-hmm. It was their idol. Okay, so then, Vayava Yosef went, Vayagid the Pari, and he said to Pari, and he said the following, Avi Va'achai, my father and brothers, Vitzainam of Karim, and the sheep and cattle, V'chol Ashelahem, and everything which was theirs, Bo'meretz Canaan, came from the land of Canaan. V'hinam, and behold, they're Be'eretz Geshen. We're going to see a few changes in the Chumash. Yosef told the brothers to tell Pari one thing, and the brothers ended up changing what they told Pari. They didn't tell the Pari what Yosef told them to say. And there's a whole debate amongst the commentaries over here and in other places on Chumash, when the Torah changes in a repetition of a story, is there a reason for it or isn't there a reason for it? Many commentaries explain there's no particular reason. It's just when you say over a story, you change a few details. And other Mefarshim learn that every detail that the Torah changes is for a reason. For instance, Yavin Chumash, when Eliezer came to the well with Rivka and told the whole story happened, when he told over the story, a few incidents were changed. So some Mefarshim say he changed it because he changed it, you know. But other Mefarshim learn, like Rashi, that there's a specific change and there's a reason for the change. You had a story, Pari had his dream, and the way Pari repeated the dream to Yosef to interpret it, there's variations in the dream and in the telling of the dream. And when we learned that, we discussed the variations. Here also, Yosef told the brothers to say one thing, they ended up saying something else. So some Mefarshim learn, like Ebenezer the Dak, and sometimes the Ramban, see, there's no particular meaning. This is what the Torah does, and that's the style of literature. And other Mefarshim, Medri, Zayar, Arachayim, HaKadosh, Kleyokar, they always elaborate on the changes that take place between the two things. And he says as follows. All my brothers are here. They came to the land of Canaan. Okay, what did Yosef tell Pari? Basically, my brothers are rich. They don't need your money. Don't worry about it. You're not going to have more mouths to feed. And don't forget, there's the middle of a hunger going on. Right? It's still the hunger going on. So Yosef says to Pari, don't worry about them. You don't have to deal with them. Umikse Yaakov and part of his brothers, meaning and mikse means part, but mikse also kotze means the end, meaning Yosef took the weakest of his brothers. Now you have to understand, they were all strong, they were all big, but from the group itself, they're the weaker guys and the stronger guys. Yosef took to Pare a delegation of the weakest of the brothers. Why? Because if Pari would see these bombas, you know, these starke, strong guys, he would say, I need you guys for soldiers. And that, again, is exactly what Yosef didn't want. So he took the weakest of the brothers to meet the Pari, you know, to see that they're a bunch of schleppers, and he should let them go. But Yatzigem lefnei Pari, and he presented them before Pari. Now, and like the Sifuna writes, what did Yosef want? He wanted Pari to see that the only thing these guys are good for is for shepherds. So don't take them for anything else. V'yemer Pari Alechov, Pari says to the brothers, Mama Seichem, what do you do for a living? You know, what's your occupation? It's very interesting. A Jew, when a Jew meets a Jew, usually ask, how are you? Are you feeling? You know, but Bari sees them, first question, what do you do for a living? You know? I got you shook up. But Yemiro Pare. No, you see clearly, the first thing Bari says, Mama Seichem. Not how are you, welcome. You know, well, I hope you enjoy your stay. First thing, how much money you have? You know, what do you do for a living? The Emil Pari said, he said to Pari, Rei Tzein Avedecha, your servants are shepherds, Gam Anachnu, Gam Aviseinu, us and our fathers. Okay? Now, Yosef said to them, Anchi Mikna, what did Yosef say before you should say to them? Yosef said in Pasuk Lamed Dalid, Yosef said to the brothers, you should say to Parei that Anchi Mikna Hayu Avedecha. What did they say over here? Rei Tzein Avedecha, we're shepherds. That means we're working for somebody else. Anchi Mikna means you own cattle. Rei Tzein means we're shepherds working for others. So already there's a variation between what Yosef told them to say and what they actually said. Okay? Why? They just said the shepherds. We belong to the shepherd class. And what it means is as follows. And this is the way Shamshon Fol Hirsch explains it. That Yosef says to the brothers, tell Parah you own cattle. The brothers said, no, we're not ashamed of our profession. We're shepherds. We're shepherds. You know, we're not bosses owning ranches of cattle. We're shepherds. Yosef wanted to make the brothers look better. And the brother said, we're not embarrassed of what we did, of what we do. We're shepherds, we're shepherds. The Yemel Pari, and they said to Pari, continued explaining to Pari, meaning, as Mfarshim said, they continued talking because Pari didn't get it, so to speak. And he said, Logur Ba'ariz Banu, we came to live temporarily in the land. The brothers didn't accept the fact that they're moving to Egypt permanently. The brothers wanted that they should be temporary living in Egypt, because the brother's home was in Israel. So they said right away to Pari, we're here only temporarily.
Why didn't they explain that they said in Ureno at the time and they say Anachnu Gamavoteinu, the difference here too?
Yeah, Minureno means, well, there's a difference here. There probably is a difference, yeah.
Minureno at the time Anachnu Gamavoteinu, but they say Anachnu Gamavoteinu.
Gam Anachnu Gamavoteinu. The only difference is they didn't say from my youth until now. Because Yosef said to tell him they're business people of owning cattle. So then they had to say this is a family business. To be shepherds, they're shepherds, not a business.
Right.
What?
They humbled themselves?
They did.
Just
yeah, but there wasn't a humbling. They weren't embarrassed of what they did. Well, he wanted to tell, the brothers should tell Pari, we don't need your money. We don't need your money. We're here, wealthy, independent people. And now the brothers are continuing why the Taka came to Egypt. And they said, they didn't say we came to Egypt because our father came down or we wanted to see our brother. They said, there's simply no grazing land for your servants' sheep in the land of Canaan. Because the hunger is very heavy in the land of Canaan, and therefore the brothers are telling Pari right away, our intention is, as soon as the hunger is over, we're going back home. That's what their intention was. Divine Providence obviously had a different in mind, because as soon as the brothers came down with Yaakov, the hunger stopped. Instead of having the hunger for 7 years, the hunger was only for 2 years. And then the brothers still didn't go back to Eretz Yisrael, because divine providence, Hashem wanted them to be in the land of Mitzrayim, because that was the preparation for the Jews to become a nation, to receive the Torah, and that's what God promised Avraham Avinu. So the brothers, from their perspective, thought they were only going to be here temporarily.
Huh?
Lagur.
Right. Correct.
What's Lagur? Lagur is
temporary. Ger is like a foreigner. And now they're asking Pari, even though they're already in Goshen. Yes, already put them in Goshen. But they come to Pari and they say, can you please allow us to live in Goshen? Which shows that even though Yosef already put him there, but they wanted Paro's permission also that they should live in Goshen. Now, the question is, if there was a hunger in Egypt and there's a hunger in Canaan, what did they gain by bringing the animals to Egypt if there was the same hunger as the land of Canaan? The brothers are saying to Pari, you know why we brought our livestock to Egypt? Because in the land of Canaan there's a hunger. But there's a hunger in Egypt also, so what did they gain by it? So the Mefarshim explains, with the Ramban asks this question, and the Ramban answers very simply. In Canaan they didn't have food, so people were eating the grass. No. So if the people were eating the grass, you can't leave the grass for the animals to eat. In Egypt, the people had food. So the grass in Egypt was left for the animals.
So it was grass, if it was hunger.
Grass grows anyway, the dried grass at least.
If they didn't have grass, maybe Egypt had a lot of excess food for cattle.
Yeah, but they're not going to give out food. You have to understand, the people didn't know the hunger was going to be over in 2 years. They thought there was another 5 years. And, you know, they didn't think it's going to be enough, so they wouldn't give the animals.
If it's a hunger, there's nothing growing, no?
Certain things grow in hunger. Grass can grow, food doesn't grow.
Why?
What I'm not a farmer. I guess.
It's no rain, and nothing doesn't grow.
Not necessarily.
Certain things can grow, fruit doesn't grow. It's possible. Okay, Vayemel Pari El Yosef. Okay, so now the brothers come to Pari with Yosef. Pari opens a dialogue with the brothers. What do you guys do for a living? They said, we're shepherds. Can you please keep us in Goshen? So Vayemel Pari El Yosef Leimer. Pari said to Yosef, Avicha ve'achecha boya elecha. Your father and your brothers have come to you. Now, basically, what's he saying? Obviously, Yosef knows the family came. What's Pari telling him? You know your father and brothers came? He says, yes, I know that. Thank you. What's he saying? So the Ramban said that Pari is not saying, Stam, I know your brothers came. The Ramban explains, the implication is that Bo Elecha, they came to you. What does it mean to you? They become dependent on you because of your position. So I want you to treat them accordingly. In other words, Pari is not saying that they came. Pari is saying they came to Egypt because of you, because of your lofty position. So therefore, treat them accordingly. That's what he's saying.
According to what? According
the proper, like, is befitting for a king. Now, Yosef didn't say, originally the Mefarsha Archaim HaKadosh explains, Yosef didn't say at the beginning they came to me, because Yosef wanted Pari to think, Pari invited them to come. If Yosef said they came to me, that means they didn't consider Pari's invitation. So Yosef is telling Pari, you invited them, they came. So Pari says, no. They came to you. Forget me. They didn't come for me. They came for you. And therefore you take care of them. Eretz Mitzrayim lefanecha hi, the land of Egypt is open before you. Meaning, whatever you want, and the land is all yours. B'meit of ha'aretz, in the best of the land. Heishiv v'icha v'sachacha, settle your father and brothers. Yeshuv b'eretz Goshen, they should live in the land of Goshen with their wishes. And this is there's a Gemara that says, Ritzayne shel Adam zehu kveidei. The will of a person is his honor. When you do what somebody wants, that's the honor of the person. Americans don't necessarily know what this means, but when it comes to respecting parents, as a rule, the respect you give to parents is when you do what they want you to do. I mean, not if it's contrary to Torah, obviously, because then God has precedence over the parents. But basically, the respective parents is not buying them presents. The respective parents is listening to them and doing the way they want you to be and to grow up the way they want you to be. So the Gemara has an expression, the will of a person, when you do his will, that is the respect of the person. So Pari is saying to the to Yosef, if your brothers want to be in Goshen, let them be in Goshen. And that's the way I'm showing honor to the brothers, by allowing them to be wherever they want to be. And also I consider Goshen the best. And he just says, if you know, if there's any soldiers amongst your brothers, you can make them as officers over the, of the cattle over my cattle. Meaning, he says, if you want, they can, any other job. But if they want Goshen, give them Goshen, because this is the proper respect. Okay.